Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll look into a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with Paul Glastras, the editor-in-chief of the Washington Monthly and a former speechwriter for President Clinton. On the eve of a crucial debate, we will discuss the disparity between Mitt Romney, the salesman who will say anything to close the deal, and Barack Obama, the highbrow policy wonk who has been painfully reluctant to even sell his own successes, including his signature Affordable Care Act. Then we'll examine why the arms flowing to the Syrian rebels are mostly going to jihadist groups as the U.S. pursues an unsuccessful policy aimed at avoiding the worst outcome instead of achieving the best outcome. David Lesh, the author of Syria, The Fall of the House of Assad, joins us to explain why the United States continues to support bringing down secular governments in the Middle East like Iraq, Syria, Libya, and Egypt that open the way for Islamic fundamentalist regimes to take power. Then finally, Jeffrey Toobin joins us. He is a staff writer at The New Yorker and a senior legal analyst at CNN. We will discuss his new book, The Oath, The Obama White House and the Supreme Court, and what is at stake for America's future if Romney is able to create a lasting activist conservative majority on the Supreme Court, or Obama is able to move it in a more moderate direction. Joining us now is Paul Glastras, the editor-in-chief of the Washington Monthly and a senior fellow at the Western Policy Center in Washington, D.C. He was a special assistant and senior speechwriter to President Bill Clinton, writing over 200 speeches for the president on subjects ranging from education to health care to the budget. Before joining the White House, Paul Glastras spent 10 years as a correspondent and editor at U.S. News and World Report. Welcome to Background Briefing, Paul Glastras.
Great to be back, Ian.
And obviously, a lot of people are anticipating the second presidential debate tomorrow, some with dread, some with extreme nervousness. And you wrote some time back in the Washington Monthly arguing that, quoting, Obama has moved more in terms of sheer legislative tonnage than any president since Lyndon Johnson, but he has been surprisingly inept at explaining to the country what he's up to and what he's achieved. It's as though he doesn't want to brag about his own accomplishments. That's for others to do. Now, what's the explanation for that? Because it is clearly apparent. And when the president dismissed Mitt Romney as a salesman, as he did following the first debate, the irony, of course, is that Obama should be more of a salesman.
No question about it. Let's look at it in two ways. One, have some sympathy for President Obama. He took office at a time when jobs were plummeting, and all that he has done since then has merely tried to get the economy back to the stage it is before he took office. And so he's having to tell the American people things would have been worse had I not acted in the face of what is for most people an existence that's no better and in many ways worse than he took office, though for no fault of his own. So part of the problem for Barack Obama is that the achievements that he's made haven't yet panned out as in the experience of most people, clearly positive change. The health care law is another example. The thing doesn't fully kick in until 2014 for a number of screwy political reasons. They had to do it that way. So people kind of dread a lot of big government coming and a lot of taxes or whatever, but they've seen in their personal lives not a lot of benefits. This isn't new. Many of the biggest achievements of past presidents have come on and not been well received at the time they got here. They've been strengthened or otherwise improved over time, and the presidents who passed them, we look back and say, what marvelous achievements. The GI Bill, for instance, was not seen as a very big deal when it was passed. Social Security, when it was passed, was denied Social Security to blacks. Its benefits didn't kick in for many years. It was quite modest in its benefits. And liberals, for instance, thought it was a sellout. But we look back on it and say, my God, that's one of the greatest programs ever created. So a lot of Barack Obama's problems is that it's very hard to sell what it is he's achieved. But part of it is that I just don't think he's been very strategic and insistent and consistent in simply selling the what he's done, both the things that people are experiencing, and some of the results of his policies are being felt by the average American, but also making the case that things will be better because of what he's done. It's that last thing. Things will be better because of what he's done. It seems to me he is almost afraid to make that argument, and I really don't know why.
Well, obviously what happened, at least to my mind, Paul Glastras, with the first debate was that Romney made a very clever tactical decision to suddenly appear as a centrist on the assumption that most of the American people aren't paying attention and he'd get a big audience, and therefore all of the money that that Obama had spent to define him negatively successfully so, I believe, will suddenly amount to naught if people think he's not the guy that they said he was. And furthermore, that has the effect of making it seem like Obama is a liar. So that I don't understand why they weren't prepared for that obvious ploy.
Well, it's a good question. I would say this in their defense. You never really knew when Romney would choose to shake the Etch-a-Sketch, as his one of his campaign managers said. You know, we thought he would move to the center once he clinched the nomination, and he went all through the summer continuing to try to please the right. So it was a little hard to know that he would do that then. It was the Romney advantage to be able to choose the moment when he would do that, and they should have been more prepared, but it's hard to know. I think, though, that President Obama would have come away with that from that debate with at least a draw had he been better at making his own case. Romney came in and he had a coherent policy argument. You can question whether it's honest, you can question whether it would work, but everything went was reducible to "I'm going to create jobs." And he had plans and policies that he said would create jobs. Barack Obama's been president for 4 years. He's done a whole heck of a lot. He should have used that debate to say, here's what I've done. Here's how they've begun to create jobs. Here is how they're going to create jobs in the future. And here are the five or six big, important, bold things I'm going to do to create even more jobs. Instead, he got lost in the weeds of his own policies. He offered no new ideas, no new policies, and so he was caught flat-footed, unable to really respond to Romney's shift to the center, but unable to make his own case.
So again, I'm speaking with Paul Glastras, the editor-in-chief of the Washington Monthly, and he was a former senior speechwriter for President Bill Clinton, writing over 200 speeches for the president on subjects ranging from education to health care and the budget. Now, I mentioned in the opening that it seems to me that Romney is an effective salesman and in effect will say anything to close the deal. And he has been spectacularly dishonest, starting with his first commercial that he made back in Iowa when he was running in the primaries, where he put John McCain's words in Barack Obama's mouth. And all the way through to the last debate between the vice president and the vice presidential hopeful Paul Ryan, who continually mentioned a lie, which is that the White House has referred to the Assad clan, the murderers in Syria, as reformers. And again, the only evidence, and even Fox News, by the way, challenged a Romney spokesman on this. It turns out that what Hillary Clinton was saying was that she was being critical of some senators who had said that the Assads were reformers. So again, they're putting words in people's mouths. So how do you you deal with that blizzard of lies on the one hand, and try to put your vision forth? In other words, are you going to spend all your time shooting down these canards, or are you going to And if you don't, they become truths if they're left hanging. On the other hand, you need to use the time putting forth your best, putting your best face forward.
Three things to answer your question. First, you're absolutely right that if, you know, you can make 12, it takes a tenth as much time to explain the lie that you just heard than to make the lie. So if all Romney has to do is lay forth four or five whoppers, and Obama will spend all his time defending it and no time making his own argument. So it is an advantage for the liar against the candidate who's not lying. Second, and so it doesn't behoove the president to spend all his time fact-checking his opponent. Second, it is possible to fight back. We saw Joe Biden do just that with Paul Ryan. And when you can't have enough command of the facts, which is what Joe Biden had, so that when Paul Ryan starts criticizing the stimulus, he immediately comes back and says, well, Congressman Ryan, then why did you write me letters asking for stimulus spending in your district saying it would create jobs? Boom. He left the man speechless. So it is absolutely possible to fight that stuff back.
So,
third,
sorry.
It is the job of the press, right, to fact check. It's a job of the media, and it's the job of moderators, not the job of each individual candidate, or at least certainly part of the job is on the press. So what the American public should want is mainstream reporters to be willing to say what is true and what is not, rather than indulge in the false equivalency of saying, well, he said 2 + 2 = 5, he said 2 + 2 = 4, you know, one thing is for sure, more questions remain, right? That's the attitude of the press, and that's got to change.
Well, but you won't change the convention of thesis, antithesis, synthesis, the pro argument, the con argument, and then this meaningless mush. That's embedded in media culture, and also
I'm not sure that's true, Ian. I think you're beginning to see now changes. NPR, the New York Times, the LA Times, they've all had having people like you and me and Jim Fallows at the Atlantic and others beating them on them for a number of years. They're now unleashing their mainstream reporters to note that when somebody says there's no evidence that climate change is caused by humans, to say, in fact, the majority of climate scientists disagree and say it has. So that's beginning to change. And I think if you look at Paul Ryan's speech at the convention, which the initial read on, if you were sort of watching CNN, was a pretty strong speech. But, you know, there were some whoppers in there. Over the course of the next 2 days, the press really did a good job of exposing the mendacity and chicanery and false logic and phony facts in Paul Ryan's speech. And it wound up, his lying became the story, and it wound up not doing Mitt Romney a lot of good. So the press, if it does its job, can police this thing.
But also, doesn't the press like a good competition? They like drama. They're not about to say Romney is going to lose. In fact, everybody's saying, you know, he's the comeback kid almost.
Well, and they are, and that is their tendency. And let's be honest, the president did just a terrible job in that debate. I mean, right.
What kind of society are we? How capricious and fickle are we that one impression like that would make such a radical difference?
Well, if you break down the data, what has happened is Romney has done much better, or at least did for the first week after that debate, in likely voters in national polls. But what he didn't do is close the gap very much in the swing states, in Ohio in particular and some other swing states. Well, why is that? And no one really knows. But Jonathan Chait at the New York Magazine has, I think, the best explanation of it is for most people who watch that debate, likely voters, they didn't really pay that much attention. And so when Mitt Romney came on, they said, well, he seems kind of stable and moderate and a safe advocate of change. But for people living in Ohio who have been listening, who have had these guys in their face for months and months and months, these are high information voters, they didn't change their mind that much. They've already made their decision that Mitt Romney plays fast and loose with the facts and has an agenda that's to the right of where they are. So the more information voters get, apparently, the more they see through it. And I think that's an indication that over time you can pretty much trust the American voters to get it right.
Well, all that criticism, just in closing, Paul Glasser, we're running out of time here, but all that criticism of the split screen and of Vice President Biden's smirks, etc. I mean, if you look back at Obama in the first debate, he's looking down, he's looking morose, he's looking at his notes. You could have a compromise, don't you think? A little more animation in your reactions without being disdainful.
I think unquestionably President Obama's demeanor was not helpful. Joe Biden's, didn't bother me as much as it bothered some other people, and I'm not sure it bothered the public that much.
No.
One tweet I saw said, "Well, the GOP complaint seems to be your guy was smiling too much as he was kicking our guy's butt."
Okay. Well, we have to close now, but I thank you so much for joining us, Paul Glasser.
Thank you, Ian.
Again, I've been speaking with Paul Glasser, the editor-in-chief of The Washington Monthly and a senior fellow at the Western Policy Center in Washington, D.C. He was a special assistant and senior speechwriter to President Bill Clinton, writing over 200 speeches for the president on subjects ranging from education to healthcare and to the budget. Before joining the White House, Paul Glasser spent 10 years as a correspondent and editor at U.S. News and World Report. We're going to take a brief station break and we'll be back talking about how the arms flow to the rebels in Syria are going to the jihadists, not the secular groups.
Pleased to meet you, thanks a lot, your check is in the mail. Marooned, marooned, marooned in a blizzard of lies. Marooned, marooned, marooned in a blizzard of lies. Your toes and knees aren't all you'll freeze when you're in it up to your thighs. It looks like snow, but you never know.